Welcome back to the Guildhall Podcast. So, we have been on a bit of a hiatus, I'm sure people have noticed, basically because of changes, life changes, and scheduling conflicts. We haven't really been able to get together that much recently. So, to tie people over, I did a bit of an experiment. Today, you're going to hear me running a bunch of AI adventures through a campaign. This is to finish off the Feywild storyline, which my players have largely ignored. All the voices you hear will be AI-generated. All the decisions that they make are AI-generated. The only thing that is non-AI is the narrator, quote-unquote me. Anything that is said by the narrator is going to be me as the DM giving input into the story. I hope you guys enjoy. Take care. And hopefully I'll see you guys at the table soon.
Welcome back to the Guildhall Podcast. Please visit us at the-guildhall.net and join us on Discord.
Start of scene. Lila and Elendil head into the Feywild. Each night, Elendil tries to play the whispering seraphim lute, and each night he can only make out a few notes before the lute becomes discordant. At first, he thought going to the Feywild would help him attune to the lute, but it seems that is not the way to unlock this mysterious instrument.
I'm so frustrated with this cursed lute. Every night I try to play it, but the notes that come out are all wrong, and it starts to sound discordant after only a few moments. What's the point of having something that powerful and beautiful if I can't even play it properly?
My dear friend, sometimes the magic of these things are beyond mortal minds to truly comprehend. Perhaps what the lute needs is for you to tap into the essence of the Feywild and channel its energy. Close your eyes and let yourself become one with nature, the forest, the river, the wind. Listen for its songs, and let the whispers guide you in playing.
Mistweaver darts back and forth ahead of Lila and Elendil, as they pass through the enchanted forests.
Mistweaver calls to Lila in a whisper. You speak words of wisdom, friend. Let's find some place quiet and listen to what the land has to say.
Indeed, I believe Mistweaver is right. Sometimes we overlook the wisdom that is present all around us, waiting to be heard. Come, let us take a moment to meditate and see what guidance nature has to offer us in this time of need.
I'm starting to understand. Nature's harmony is what this lute is attuned to, isn't it?
As the party slows down and listens to the forest itself, the sound of the forest almost resonates with the lute. The crickets and cicadas, the songbirds, the frogs, all of their various songs seem to hint at the nature of the lute.
Mistweaver turns back to Lila. I can hear it, a faint melody drifting through the breeze. Listen close, can you hear it too?
I can. It's beautiful, yet eerie. It doesn't follow a logical pattern, yet it seems to flow seamlessly nonetheless.
Elendil sways gently and begins to play a variation of the song on the lute, fingers deftly moving over its string.
The notes come out pure and hauntingly beautiful. Soon the random noises of nature seem to all sing in harmony to a great symphony that is taking the lead from the whispering seraphim lute.
Elendil sings in an ethereal voice, the song flowing from him effortlessly as he becomes one with the music, the land, and his lute. Oh, listen to me, O moon that lights the night, and to the wind that dances to your beat on...
Lila joins in, her melodic voice blending with Elendil's, their voices lifting the forest creature's songs and carrying them to the heavens. Well, listen to the heart that beats beneath the earth, and to the fire that rages from its core.
Elendil begins to improvise, the melody weaving into something truly sublime and enchanting. Oh, listen to the dreamer who drifts off to sleep, and to the river that flows through his mind. Show.
Lila's voice takes on a haunting, almost sorrowful quality. We listen to the silence that echoes in our souls, and to the whispers of those who've passed beyond.
Soon the notes end, and the lute goes quiet again.
Mistweaver looks at the party in wonder and awe. Your voices, they were angelic, ethereal. What was that you played and sang?
It's a song, I guess. It just came to me. A song to the moon, the wind, the earth, the fire, and the dream. Elendil turns to Lila. Maybe you're right. Maybe this is how the lute's meant to be played.
Indeed it is. You have finally found a way to unlock the secrets hidden within those strings. It was only when you tapped into the power of nature did the music flow out of you so freely. And remember, my dear friend, the lute's secrets can never be fully mastered by one alone. They belong to both the instrument's owner and the land he calls home.
I don't know, but I can feel the energy of the lute pulsating through me, almost as if the lute is singing to my very soul. It's a strange but exhilarating sensation.
That is the power of the lute, to reach into one's very essence and speak directly to one's soul. To feel this connection is a truly special experience, and I can tell by your eyes that you've never felt anything like it before.
Miss Weaver smiles. You and the lute make such a lovely pair. It was truly a wonderful thing to hear and witness. I hope one day to be able to play that lute myself.
I am sure that one day you too will find your own way to sing the lute song.
Elsewhere in the Feywild, Valerissa and Gromgar arrive at an autumn Fey estate. There they are petitioning a lady of the Sandine's court to allow them to visit the capital city of Sylphidia Serenitatis. The estate is large, and the weather cool. A line of apple trees seem to be greeting you as you approach. In the autumn wind, leaves are falling off of the trees. As you approach, a large rider on a horse rides up to you. He is an imposing figure in a dark cloak riding a black stallion. He does not have a head and instead carries a pumpkin in his hand.
Greetings. We are here to request to meet with the Lady of Sehanin's court, if that is possible. It is of great urgency we speak with her.
A great guttural laugh echoes from beneath his cloak as he rides away from the group.
That's definitely not a standard Fey character. What was his business? An agent of Sehanin.
I'm thinking we've come into the presence of an imposter or an evil spirit, lass. That being the only explanation I can fathom for such a strange creature.
After another moment, a beautiful elven woman walks out of the field and towards you. She's wearing a dress of orange and red, with a warm cloak wrapped tightly about her.
Valerissa turns towards her, giving a respectful bow. Greetings, milady Dyke. We have come to speak with Lady Sandingham about a matter of great import.
One does not simply walk into the court of the head of a fey court, my dear.
Gromgar bows as well. I beg your pardon, lass, but we do not wish to trouble the Lady of Sehanin unnecessarily.
If that is the case, then what business do you have with the Queen?
Well, lass, we have heard a rumor of an old song known as the Song of Remembrance.
It is said that when Sehanin and Corellon first left the Feywild, a Song of Remembrance was sung, and anyone who heard it was granted the ability to see and remember Sehanin and Corellon for all eternity.
That is a song known only to a few. There are some scholars who would have recorded the notes of music. How did you come upon that song?
It was spoken by a minstrel from a distant land. It was a long story, but the upshot was, he claimed that the song was sung by the elves of Sehanin's court, the night she and Corellon left the Feywild.
There is a temple a few days away from here. Arrive there before the next full moon. On the night of the full moon, make an offering to Sehanin. If she accepts it, she will welcome you into her city. Otherwise, you will not be able to journey there.
Valerissa nods and turns to the rest of the party. It appears we have our work cut out for us. A few more days of travel and we should reach our destination.
Indeed, a temple and an offering before the full moon.
By the next full moon, we shall attempt to seek an audience with Sehanin. It seems fortune smiles upon our endeavor.
Change of scene. Sigil in a rowboat, gliding down the Scar, towards the bridge that spans worlds, is Alara and Tamaris. As they head towards the bridge, Alara receives a message from Valerissa.
Hello, my dear friend. I hope this message finds you in good health and high spirits. It pains me to admit it, but there is some bad news to share. The song that you heard before you left, the Song of Remembrance, was indeed sung by the Fey Elves in Sehanin's court when she and Corellon first left the Feywild. However, the notes to this song have been lost for eons. We are unable to locate the exact melody. There are no recorded notes of it in any of the libraries we searched. No scholar is known to have composed it, and the only place where it could be heard again is said to be in the capital city of Sylphidia, Serenitatis, in the heart of Sehanin's demiplane. Unfortunately, the way to Sylphidia is dangerous, and we need Sehanin's permission to enter her city. This permission is only granted after an offering to her. Our hopes lie in the temple, which I mentioned to you before, but time is not in our favor. I trust this message will find you on your way. Take care.
Thank you, Valerissa, for your message. The news is troubling, but also very intriguing. A lost song. It sounds like a legendary tale. Yet, The fact that it might be located in Sanin's demoplane makes it feel very real. I have a feeling that this could be a turning point in our quest, a quest for the truth behind the fall of the gods, but it will indeed require us to obtain Sanin's permission to enter her city and locate the song. We may have to find out how to reach the capital city of Sylphidia Serenitatis and go from there.
Sylphidia Serenitatis. I have heard of the place, but never thought it a possibility to visit, let alone have any part in its affairs. We seem to find ourselves drawn towards it with every step we take towards resolving this quest.
Elara and Tamaris's boat continues to move slowly towards the bridge.
My love, do you think there could be any truth in that legend of the song being a kind of key to unlock some hidden knowledge about what happened to the gods and Corellon?
It seems to be a good lead, at least. If we can find the song and understand its significance, perhaps it will lead us closer to the truth we seek. But the road ahead is sure to be perilous, as everything seems to be when dealing with the Fey Courts.
Mistweaver whispers in Elara's mind. Elara, Elara, come, listen, listen.
Elara Gus, what? Who said that?
The wind, the wind. It spoke to me, and it is still here with us, waiting.
Elara blinks her eyes and looks around her and sees nothing unusual. I don't think you heard anything, my dear. We are still at sea, and the wind is still blowing in our sails. Nothing unusual has happened. She pats Mistweaver, but if you are still hearing something strange, we need to find out what it is. Perhaps we should get to the temple a little earlier than planned.
Mistweaver nods. I want to see where this voice comes from, Elara. I feel that it might be of importance.
Tamaris turns to the pair with a frown. If you two heard something unusual, it might be important we make land before we continue to the bridge that spans worlds. Perhaps it is Sehanin's way of trying to warn us of danger to come.
The boat journeys beneath the bridge and up ahead. The group sees a large rocky valley beyond the bridge. The smell of brimstone fills their noses, and the sound of bats flying overhead can be heard.
Mistweaver sniffles. Something strange about this valley. It smells like brimstone, and there are so many bats here.
Indeed, and there's also the smell of iron. Takes a deep breath. Yes, iron. I remember this valley. We must be very close now.
Finally, the boat lurches as if thrown, and you find yourself in a place far from Sigil. The entire landscape is filled with red dust, and the heat of a red sun bakes your skin. In the distance, you can see a foreboding iron fortress. The feeling of dread hits you to your bones as you realize that you are in the abyss, in the lair of Pazunia.
Tamaris whispers in awe and fear. We are truly in the abyss now. And look there, just past those mountains. The iron fortress, a place even worse than I have imagined it. I fear whatever awaits us there may be far worse than any demon.
My love, this is our chance to face this danger and finally uncover what lies at the heart of our quests. No matter how dark this place may seem, we must be strong and never give in to the darkness that seeks to consume us. Remember, we are together.
Your small boat continues down the river Styx as the pace of the river picks up.
Mistweaver sniffs the air nervously. Elara, do you hear that? Sounds like howling or wolves.
Yes, I hear them. Those are no ordinary wolves, though. Their howls sound much darker and more sinister.
In the abyss, creatures take on many twisted forms. We can hope they're just twisted wolves or dire beasts of some sort and not worse.
Your stomach drops as the boat is thrown down a fall into another portal, onto a deeper plane of the abyss.
Mistweaver shrieks in terror. Ah, ah, what the hell? Where the hell are we now? We just went down a fall.
Calm down, little one. Little one, I don't know either, but we have no choice but to carry on. Elara whispers her spell in the arcane language, and as she does, the others fall gently to the ground without feeling a sudden impact. There, that's better. Now we can focus on whatever dangers are ahead.
After a few moments of sheer terror, the party slowly lands on the 47th plane of the abyss near the city of Zelotar. Elara and Tamaris can see a small group of merchants entering the city. A large Hezru demon is giving orders and looking over the wares.
Do we follow them in, or go a different route?
The merchants seem to have their wares ready, and they look fairly safe. Right. Maybe we should follow them and see what we can learn.
Mistweaver sniffs the air. Something is very wrong here.
Tamaris looks around carefully as the party enters the bustling city of Zelatar. The city itself appears to be quite vast, and its inhabitants are as varied as you would expect in an abyssal plain. Demons of various kinds, twisted humanoids, and other strange creatures that defy categorization. As we follow the merchant group into the heart of Zelatar, I can sense a palpable aura of dread that hangs over the city. The demonic forces here are far stronger and more oppressive than even the darkest parts of the Shadowfell.
Mistweaver hisses in fear as he shivers. The air reeks of blood, sulfur, and terror, Elara. The buildings around us are twisted and jagged. This place feels like an alive monster, waiting to strike us.
The city streets windy and curve. They journey up and down the triple plain of Azagrath. Up ahead is the Argent Palace, the fortress of Grazda.
There it is, the Argent Palace. This is where the pit fiends keep the souls of mortals they torment for all eternity.
Elara and Tamaris feel drawn to something inside of Graz's palace. Something seems to be calling them to it.
What could this be? An aura of power, perhaps? A symbol or a key to unlock a secret? She points ahead at an ornate golden door, hidden by shadows. There it is, whatever it is calling us.
If the powers at work within the Argent Palace have called us here, it would be madness to turn a deaf ear. He steps closer to the ornate door. Let us see what awaits us inside.
Mistweaver sniffs the air. Something evil awaits behind that door. But the lure is great, and I feel we must proceed.
Elara and Tamaris find something they were not expecting beyond the doors of the Argent Palace. A masquerade appears to be going on. Hundreds of guests, most wearing very little, if anything, seek to petition the Prince of Pleasure, Grazes. You can see him above all, sitting in a throne looking down at the group. The masks seem to have a grip on the guests, each of them taking on the characteristics of the mask they wear. The sound of pleasure and pain can be heard from all over the room. Across the room appears a beautiful woman with stark black hair, wearing a simple masquerade mask. Unlike most of the guests, she is not giving in to the decadence of the party. She wears a beautiful black dress and looks at the three of you as you enter. A table of masks sit to your left as you walk into the palace.
Elara shudders at the sight before them. My, how have the people been so entranced and enthralled? She eyes the table of masks warily. The choice to wear a mask may not be as simple as it seems here in Zelatar.
Tamaris steps towards the strange woman who does not seem entranced by the masquerade. Madam, could you enlighten us about this strange event? He eyes the masks and shudders slightly. It's a sight more chilling than even the abyss itself.
Mistweaver sniffs around the room nervously, shivering in the cool breeze from the palace. Elara, this place feels so wrong. She stops in front of the beautiful black-haired woman. She is different from the others, don't you think?
In a sultry voice she speaks. First put on a mask. Then we may speak, she says to Tamaris.
Thank you for your response, madam. She shakes her head, unwilling to take part in such a masquerade. We do not wish to participate in this depraved and twisted ritual, even if it means gaining knowledge.
Trust me, they already lost themselves before they walked into here. Perhaps you want a simple one? One that doesn't have the same pull on the wearer. She says as she hands Elara two unadorned masks.
These simple masks, but they look blank and unadorned. They have no powers or influences over the mind? She raises a skeptical eyebrow.
Not for one such as yourself. She says, unless you want to join the festivities, a beautiful woman like you could cause all sorts of mischief.
Mistweaver recoils in disgust at the sight of so many masked guests in a twisted pleasure pain masquerade. I will not wear a mask, she says, voice steady. And neither should we participate in these depraved festivities.
I'm sorry, Guardian. But this is not a ball for your kind. You have to observe only.
But Guardian, if they won't tell us why Grazis called us here.
Come, my lady, put on the mask and join me away from the... She looks towards the group noise of this room.
What of us, lady? He turns to her, awaiting her instructions. It would be most unwise to stray too far in these unfamiliar surroundings, especially since we have no clear purpose yet.
Elara looks over the masks, that the mysterious woman handed her. If we put on one of these blank masks, will we be able to keep some shred of our true selves?
Why, I am sure one as skilled as yourself can look upon an object and see the magic beneath. If you don't believe my word, why not check for yourself?
Mistweaver watches Aelara cautiously as she takes one of the unadorned masks. The small cat arches her back slightly and snarls softly.
Aelara's eyes widen, and she frowns, looking down at the mask in her hand as if it were some vile creature. Very well, she hesitates for a moment, but then places the mask over her face, turning it to the side as if to observe the workings of her magic on it. After a few moments, Aelara seems to relax slightly as she examines the mask further, reaching out a finger to brush its surface. No enchantments here, not even illusions, simply an unadorned piece of leather. Ha!
He turns to the strange woman who seems to be trying to coax Aelara into her private company. Is it safe to trust her guidance? He asks in a low voice, turning slightly to look at her directly, even with her apparent freedom from the influence of the masks.
Aelara takes the other unadorned mask and holds it out to Tamaris. I believe these may provide us some privacy and freedom from the effects of the masks, though they appear to hold no real power themselves. But I feel a connection with this woman. Perhaps she wishes to help us. For now, I would recommend taking one and following her.
The masquerade walks with you deeper into the palace, past rooms where it is obvious what is going on within, into a smaller study. Old books line the walls, and there is an expensive couch and a small fire. A large picture of Grazd and Igwilv, in an embrance, hangs above the fireplace. One must think highly of himself to adorn his own house with such artwork.
Mistweaver sits quietly and nervously. So you like this place?
The masquerade lets out a small laugh. It is not my style, but I go where the party is. So I find myself in all sorts of places, dear, she says as she pets Mistweaver around her ear.
Oh, well then you must get around a lot.
So tell me, she steps closer, lowering the mask from her face. What brings us here? What purpose does Grazd have for us in his palace of pleasure? Her eyes flicker over the various books and scrolls lining the shelves around them. And what is your role in all this?
The masquerade looks at Aelara. Please keep in on. You have no idea what you are doing here. And I assure you, you will be safer wearing one of those than being without one. My role is an observer. One who has been around a long time, my dear. A long time. I also know it was not the party that called you here, but something else.
I see. She frowns slightly, but her expression becomes thoughtful as she contemplates the information given to her. Well, it seems our options are limited for now. If you can tell us what this other force is, perhaps we can better understand why Grazd has summoned us to his palace.
He hasn't, and likely he doesn't know that you managed to slip in. The gates of Sigil can be so tricky, you never know where one might spill you out if you're not careful.
So, what is that mysterious force? Why us? What does it want with Grazd? The cat looks over at Aelara as if seeking reassurance from her human friend.
Why, Mistweaver, your friends have a destiny, their very own prophecy to fulfill.
Aelara gazes at the mysterious woman in disbelief. Prophecy? Destiny? And what destiny could we possibly have here, in the depths of the abyss? We're not even in Sigil, for Corellon's sake. She shakes her head, eyes wide and full of fear and confusion. This doesn't make any sense. What kind of prophecy involves the savior of the nine hells, and why should we fulfill it?
Aelara, you can't not fulfill it. It is going to happen. You can only choose if you will be prepared for it or not.
Aelara sighs deeply, looking down at her unmasked hands, as if searching for answers there. I have no choice, do I? If it's already written, then what I do, or what I believe, can only be of little consequence.
Actually, the prophecy is quite clear that you have all of the choice. The crystal ruby rod of Asmodeus is going to fall into your hands tonight. What you do with it is your decision.
The crystal ruby rod of Asmodeus? She gasps softly and looks up at the mysterious woman with a shocked expression. You mean, here?
The rod? Here? Is this what all the trouble is about? The small feline arches an eyebrow curiously.
At last, now you are catching on. Yes, the rod is here. In fact, Aegwulf is going to present it to her lover tonight.
So it's here, and we have a choice. But to choose to leave it here, wouldn't that mean risking the future of the multiverse, perhaps even our own? No, we must take it from them. It's what must be done. Oh, but she looks at Tamaris uncertainly. If the prophecy speaks of the savior of the nine hells, does that mean that one of us?
Tamaris shakes his head in disbelief and confusion as he ponders over what Alara just revealed. The savior of the nine hells, we don't even understand what this prophecy speaks of. But if we are indeed the ones destined to fulfill it, perhaps it is something greater than just obtaining a crystal ruby rod.
Alara sighs heavily, running a hand through her hair as she gazes down at the unadorned mask still clutched in her other hand. If this prophecy is indeed true, we're in this now. I mean, who am I to argue with the fates? She looks at the mysterious woman. All right, if the ruby rod is to fall into our hands tonight, what should we do?
That, I am afraid, is up to you. I don't have a part to play in this story. I am just an observer.
Then I think we have no choice but to put the masks back on and blend in with the guests. I am afraid it is the only way to get close enough to obtain the ruby rod if we are to fulfill the prophecy.
Alara nods and sighs. And so be it. Let us wear the masks and play our role. But I won't let them change who I truly am inside.
That it won't, dear. Trust me. The mask can hide what you want to hide from the world. But you can't hide from yourself.
Alara shakes her head in disbelief, looking up at the mysterious woman, who continues to pet the small feline. That's absurd. Even if this prophecy were true, which I still can't believe, we couldn't just decide what to do with the ruby rod, could we?
Why can't you? The rod was cast out of the nine hells by Caleb after he killed Admedius. She says as her eyes become wistful for a moment, as if she is remembering something.
Then, there is hope. Perhaps Caleb doesn't want us to fulfill the prophecy, but rather wants us to keep it out of the wrong hands, to prevent the return of Admedius and the blood war from continuing.
Nods his head in agreement. I can only imagine that the ruby rod holds great power, more power than we could ever hope to possess ourselves. To allow it to fall back into the clutches of the blood war's victors, that would be catastrophic to all the planes of the multiverse.
Some of the devils cry out for purpose. They want to fight the blood war again. Others want to start a war amongst the devils to gain power. Now that Caleb has all but relinquished his throne, then there are some outside of the nine hells who would crave it for themselves, an artifact of that great power. Yet, for all of this, you two are the ones who are going to get it.
Tamaris gulps as he absorbs all this information and nods in acceptance. Then we must see it through to its proper conclusion. We shall take the ruby rod, not for ourselves, but to ensure it falls into the right hands and not the hands of those who would seek to bring about even greater destruction and chaos.
So what should we do now? The small feline looks between the three of them.
The mysterious woman puts her hand to Tamaris's cheek. Sometimes there are no right choices. The only best choice is the one you can live with. I know better than most.
Then let us take the first steps to living with this decision. We shall wear the masks, blend into the guests, and make our move to retrieve the ruby rod. The fate of the nine hells, and perhaps of the multiverse as well, rests upon our shoulders.
Mistweaver, whimpering, curls up next to Alara. I don't know about you guys, but I still can't believe any of this is really happening.
The Queen of Masks gives a nod to you. I'll see you again if you ever decide to come to a masquerade.
Masks? I'm really confused by the word she used. I don't even remember my own mask.
I pat Mistweaver. It's all right, little one. The masks you wore tonight were only simple disguises. They held no enchantment or influence over you.
Come, Mistweaver. Alara, Port. We need to decide our next move. We must wear these masks again to infiltrate the guests, and once we are close enough, on.
Alara and Tamaris re-enter the party room. Hundreds of bodies engage in all manner of passions on the floor. Above it all are the nobility, each looking down upon the mask. Gras walks along his balcony as each of the nobility bow to him as he surveys the room. Just then, entering the room is an enchanting woman in every sense of the word. Aegwulf, the famed archmage, beautiful as a blade, walks in her emerald green dress up the stairway towards Gras' desk.
Alara watches as the two nobility approach each other, and notices that Igwulf seems to be carrying something. There they are, she whispers to Tamaris as she points towards the stairs, where she sees a shimmering light emanating from the direction where Igwulf was heading.
Tamaris, his gaze follows Igwulf as she ascends to where Grast is standing. We must approach them, but we must be careful. We cannot allow them to know the true reason for our presence here tonight.
Elara and Tamaris slip through the party and make their way to the stairs. Up ahead, they see Igwulf walking towards Grast. He sees his beloved. He extends his hand toward her as she offers him her hand. There they embrace, authentic love in a place so alien to the concept. Grast seems to noticeably change as his beloved is in his arms as he walks her back to the thrones.
Elara, her eyes widen with shock and amazement as she sees Igwulf and Grast embrace before her eyes, their love and passion undeniable, even here, even in this darkest and most twisted of all the abyss. Love exists.
Tamaris nods, his expression softening a little as he watches the couple. Aye, a true love that transcends all boundaries, even those of this terrible abyss.
The room seems to fade away from the pair as they begin to speak with each other. The party continues, more music plays, people sway to the song on the floor, or the song between their body. Few people seem to give Elara or Tamaris a second look.
Elara grins to Tamaris as she slips her mask back onto her face, but only after taking a long look around the room before doing so. Now, let us see what secrets await us in this forbidden realm.
Smirks and nods as he adjusts his own mask before following after her. Lead on, my love. I have faith in you.
Elara and Tamaris get closer to the throne room, then they see it. A Quasit, who Elara recognizes as Igwulf's familiar, walks towards the couple, carrying a box as large as it is. Both Elara and Tamaris are drawn to the package.
She moves closer to the box, reaching out her hand to feel its shape. This must be it, the crystal ruby rod of Asmodeus. Why are they giving it away? Does this mean we can finally fulfill the prophecy?
His gaze flickers towards Grast as he sits on his throne, his eyes narrowed and filled with a mix of envy and Tamaris' despair as he watches his beloved present the box to him. Why indeed? Is it possible that even here, in this dark realm of the abyss, the forces of light and love are at work?
Mistweaver's eyes narrow as she looks up at the box. Or could it simply be that there are other forces at work here? Ones that we do not fully comprehend or appreciate?
Grast takes up the package and opens it. Inside is the crystal ruby rod of Asmodeus. Grast grasps the hilt of the rod and lifts it. And just as suddenly, his hand recoils from it. A brief scream leaves his lips, one that immediately silences the party. Igwulf jumps back and grabs at Grast's hand as the rod strikes the floor. Several of the nobles immediately run towards the rod.
Tamaris, she shouts urgently, pointing towards the floor where the crystal ruby rod is lying. Quickly!
Before Tamaris can reach the rod, another of the partygoers grabs it. The change is instantaneous as his visage hardens. Before he can do anything, Igwulf casts a spell of disintegration at the noble, destroying him in an instant. Screams erupt from the party as people are trampled below, trying to escape from the palace. A brawl starts and demonic guards move in from back rooms to protect Grazes.
Tamaris grabs Elara's hand tightly as chaos erupts around them. Elara! He shouts above the din, his voice strained with panic and adrenaline as they try to move away from the scene unfolding around them. Stay close! We cannot afford to lose each other now. No.
Darting back and forth through the melee, Elara catches sight of the rod for a moment before being shoved against a crowd.
Elara stammers out loud. It can't be. Where did it?
Snaps her claws out in a defensive stance, protecting her human from the chaos around them. Watch out, Elara! Someone is trying to stab you from behind.
One of Lamia's guards lunges at Elara, trying to eliminate anyone who gets too close to Grazes.
Elara raises her hand and points it in the direction of the guard. Vulnerability!
Yes. Good Elara, she hisses with her cat voice. Show them the true power of a wizardess.
A prismatic spray launches from Elara's fingers, throwing the lamia into a crowd. The rod is sitting on the ground of the room.
Now, if I am right...
Tamaris races towards the rod, grabbing it with one hand before turning to face their attackers. Elara!
End of scene.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the adventure. Stay tuned for more episodes. You can watch us play on twitch.tv at the Guildhall Podcast channel. If you want to join a game or just say hi, stop by our Discord. Details are at the-guildhall.net. The music in this episode was created by Philip E. Ray and used under Creative Commons. Thank you, and I hope to see you next time.